All right. Good afternoon and welcome to this edition of Fulbright Scholar Opportunity Webinars. My name is Michelle Balorchi and I'm an Outreach and Recruitment Specialist here at the Institute of International Education, known as IIE. I'm based in the Washington, D.C. office, and if you've been joining us for webinars in the past 2 years, you know that we are actually across the United States, and we bring webinars to you from all of our team members who are regional specialists for the program. All right, so I'm going to begin the webinar, and if you have questions along the way, we'll be taking those more towards the end, but if there's any questions that do come up, we'll try and get those answered for you. Okay, so a little bit of background about the Fulbright Scholar Program, Fulbright Program in particular. This program has been around for more than 70 years. It was established in 1946 to strengthen relationships between the United States and people around the world through educational exchanges. And we at IIE have been administering this program on behalf of the State Department, which sponsors the program. And specifically, it's the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. So State Department, along with IIE and the binational Fulbright Commissions Abroad, are the three main stakeholders in this program. And so you'll be hearing me refer to Fulbright Commissions. And if there isn't a commission in that country, you'll also hear the term POST. That refers to the U.S. embassies that administer the program in country. All right, and just to give you a little, you know, background on the program and how it's evolved throughout the decades, you can see a picture on the left-hand side of one of our first scholars to Burma, and then a scholar who was part of the Arctic Initiative on the right side of the slide. And this really speaks to how Fulbright has evolved throughout the past few decades to really address the needs, you know, currently in research and the academic landscape. And I'll be speaking more to the new things in the program that are available today. Fulbright in numbers. So as you can see, a lot of people have participated in this program. It is a program sponsored by the U.S. government for citizens of the United States as well as citizens from abroad to come to the United States and teach and research. I'd say, you know, if you get a Fulbright grant, you are in really good company. We've had a lot of people participate in this program who've received Nobel Prizes, Pulitzer Prizes. We've had heads of state or government participate, as well as MacArthur Fellows and Presidential Medal of Freedom recipients. Specifically in terms of what I'm going to be speaking about today, which is the U.S. Scholar Program, we send about 800 scholars abroad every year, and this includes faculty, professionals, independent artists, lawyers, journalists, scientists, etc. So it's a wonderful program to engage with your counterparts abroad, to make new connections, and to really, you know, kind of serve as a cultural ambassador for the United States, and that's really at the core of the mission of this program. Let me just also say that if you are a recent college graduate or recently completed your master's degree and have just fewer than 5 years of work experience, you would be eligible for the Fulbright U.S. Student Program. So if any of you are recent college grads, the student program would be something for you. This is specifically opportunities for faculty and professionals to teach and research abroad, and as many of the awards require terminal degrees. And in terms of diversity and inclusion, we do have this as one of our main goals, to have not only a variety of, you know, and diversity of participants in this program, but also, you know, geographic representation in terms of diversity, tribal colleges, minority-serving institutions, rural colleges, small liberal arts colleges, et cetera, to really represent the United States in its entirety. Because this is a program, you know, by the U.S. government for the United States citizens, and so we really want to ensure that we do have proper representation. So we do encourage everyone, including those with military background, veterans, to apply. Okay, so as I mentioned, this is the webinar for awards for the U.S. Scholar Program and specifically the South and Central Asia region today. In terms of, I've got a little graphic here for you. The vast majority of grants are for the Scholar Program's Teaching and Research Awards. We also have International Education Administrator Seminars. If you're interested in learning more about that, check our webinar schedule for those IEA webinars. We do actually have one IEA seminar to India. These are two-week seminars, kind of exposure visits for administrators. But the vast majority of the program are the teaching and research grants, which what I'll be that is what I'll be focusing on today. Okay, so in terms of baseline eligibility for the U.S. Scholar Program, U.S. citizenship is required, and then depending on the degree, depending on the award, it will list the degree requirements. So whether a terminal degree is required or a particular number of years of experience teaching, et cetera. And as I mentioned, this program is open to professionals as well. So if you have a terminal degree or if you're you know, independent scholar, an artist that doesn't have a terminal degree, you're still welcome to apply. And as I mentioned, we do encourage veterans to apply as well, and all things being equal, there would be a preference for veterans. And we also have a relatively new policy on the number of Fulbright Scholar grants you can receive, so we have removed the lifetime cap, as well as we do have a two-year waiting period. So if you'd like more information about that, we do have it listed on our eligibility requirements. Okay, so as I mentioned, the goal of this program is to support teaching and research abroad, and we have more than 130 countries that participate in the U.S. Scholar Program, and the grant length varies anywhere from 2 months to 12 months, and even longer for some of the postdoc awards. The way that you approach the Fulbright Scholar Program is to apply to a specific award with a specific project in mind. So we have a catalog of awards, and if we have time towards the end, I'll kind of walk you through what that looks like. But the awards catalog does have over 450 unique award opportunities, and they might list preferred disciplines, et cetera, so it's important to take a look at that. This year, the application deadline is September 16th. Keep in mind, this is for opportunities to teach and research in academic year 20 and 21, so 2020 to 2021 is what we're open for now. And you can affiliate with a variety of host institutions. I'll be getting a little more into detail about how to get a letter of invitation if the host institution is not listed in the award. Okay, so as I mentioned, the way to approach the program is to really think about what do you want to do and where you want to go and develop a project and identify the location. You might already have a project in mind, but you don't know where you can go with that, so you're encouraged to talk to us at IIE, and we can assist you with that. And then you would put your application in by September 16th. We have the review process and selection, and then you're on your way. So, you know, it might not be that you're ready to apply this year, but certainly it's good to keep in mind that the application opens for the year before the opportunity would take place. Okay, so going right into South and Central Asia, which is the region that I cover. I assist with all of the outreach and recruitment for the SCA region is what we call it for short. This region has 11 countries that offer over 80 grants. So there are several opportunities that are worth exploring, and I'll be highlighting a few of those today. I want to point out that we do also have a regional overview, so it's kind of an interactive map on our website, and it features different grantee stories, projects that they've done, where they've been placed, and also links to their blog stories that they've submitted to us. So it's a great place to start if you're not familiar with the region, if you'd like to learn more about what the priorities are in the region in terms of what the needs are for bringing U.S. experts to their institutions. The South and Central Asia region is rather vast, and it's very diverse in and of itself. So the South Asia region differs greatly from the Central Asia region. So I'll be kind of going down into the breakdown of what's available there. I would encourage anyone who's interested in really making an impact, as many scholars who will be placed in this region might be the first Fulbrighter that institution has had. So it's a great and exciting region to be in at the moment, making an impact, you know, teaching courses in English and researching in areas that are you know, maybe hosting the first Fulbrighter. Okay, so moving right along, I wanted to first highlight some of the new awards that we have. So for those of you that might have seen the catalog last year, you saw that we had a Teaching English as a Foreign Language Award, which was restricted only to Kazakhstan. We've now opened it up to all five Central Asian countries. So this is a wonderful experience for those of you that have TEFL background, so linguistics, teaching English as a foreign language, et cetera, to either teach the students and or junior level faculty or teachers at the institution, teacher training. So this can be opened up again to the five countries, so Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, and Kyrgyzstan. The you would just rank your preference, and again, this is a great way to have impact, especially Kazakhstan has opened up, well, I'll be getting more into detail about that, but they've made English a priority as a third kind of official language. The other new opportunity this year is in India. It's the Fulbright Kalam Climate Fellowship. And the goal of this award is to build long-term capacity to address climate change-related issues by bringing technical and scientific experts to India from the U.S. We have three grants for this fellowship. So I would encourage you to take a look at some of the preferred disciplines listed. You can be affiliated with a university, with a research center, with really any appropriate institution that would address the climate issues. So that's something new. And in terms of a highlight that I wanted to discuss is the multi-country option. This is the only award in the region that's a multi-country opportunity. It's called the South and Central Asia Regional Research Program. So as the award title implies, it is open to research projects, but you can propose a project that's of relevance to two or three countries within South and Central Asia. The topic can be either historical or contemporary, and you would need to take a look at the award description in terms of letters of invitation, if there's a requirement. Some countries do require, and others do not have a requirement. It is a 3 to 9 month grant, so it's important to select the amount of time that you would, that would be appropriate to be able to get to all of these places within the region. So that's another exciting opportunity. We've had this in the past, and we're happy that it's still available. So that's the South and Central Asia Regional Research Program. Okay, and then moving on to Central Asia, we've got various opportunities here, and for the most part, with one exception, they are open to all disciplines. And typically, what we'll notice in this region is they really want the scholar to be there for the full semester or the full academic year, so one or two semesters. Each one is a little different in terms of what they're looking for specifically, in terms of whether there's a preference for teaching or research or a combination of both. You'll see that Kazakhstan does list a 50-50 ratio if you're proposing to teach and research. And so a little bit of information about Kazakhstan. As I mentioned earlier, they recently announced that in addition to Kazakh and Russian languages, that English would be the third language taught in schools and also the third kind of official language. And so this is really for them to, the goal of this is really for them to build a population that is ready for all kinds of future global engagement. And so this way it's really an exciting opportunity to be a Fulbrighter in Kazakhstan, teaching in English, researching, you know, working side by side with researchers and students, and having an impact there. So if you are for teaching awards, scholars would teach one or two courses. That's the expectation. It can be at the undergrad or graduate level. And depending on their discipline, also kind of consult on curriculum development, advising graduate students, or conducting faculty training. So that kind of would fall into what the duties would be for teaching. And then, as I mentioned, for research, it's a 50, teaching and research is a 50-50 ratio. And then for scholars that are engaging in 100% research, they do encourage that you provide occasional lectures and different talks and also affiliate with the American Corner, which is affiliated to the U.S. Embassy. So giving kind of talks at the American Corner or the American Center, you find these different in different places across the region. So that's Kazakhstan. And then in Kyrgyzstan, or Kyrgyz Republic as it's often called, it's offering a teaching or research award for 5 to 10 months at any appropriate institution. You can go, and this is true for all of the awards, if you're not sure what the country's interested in or what they've funded in the past, especially when it's an award that's open to all disciplines, you can go to the Fulbright Scholar Directory, and I can point that out at the end, where you can see what scholars have done in the past and where they've gone and who they've been affiliated with. So a lot of these awards may not list the institutions that you could be placed at. If it says any appropriate institution, that's up to you. But keep in mind, for this region, the American Embassy will work closely with you, and oftentimes they will place you based on your skills and expertise and where that's needed in the region. The same is true for the award to Tajikistan. This award is focused on teaching, so even though they do offer a teaching and research combination, you'll see the ratio that they've listed is 80% teaching, 20% research. So really, trying to build capacity in the classroom in one of the universities in Tajikistan. And they do list some preferred disciplines for this award. They tend to be centered on the humanities, social sciences, and business administration. And then with Turkmenistan, they offer a 10-month teaching grant, and this one's called multiple disciplines because it isn't open to all disciplines. They've actually specified the list of disciplines that they are open to receiving applications on, and so and they've also listed some specializations. So the scholar who will be placed in Turkmenistan will be at a university in the capital of Ashgabat. And English there is the medium of instruction. So that would be specifically the International University for the Humanities and Development or the International Oil and Gas University. So English is the medium of instruction at those two universities. So take a look. If you're interested in that one, there are some select disciplines and specializations listed. And then last but not least in the region is Uzbekistan. It also has an All Disciplines Award for teaching or teaching and research for 5 or 10 months. Scholars in the past have done TEFL. They've taught courses on environmental sciences, nutrition, and the like. So again, I would guide you to the Fulbright Scholar Directory to see what past grantees have done there. Again, in Central Asia, the focus really is capacity building. You may be the first or second or, the first international hosted scholar, perhaps, not just with Fulbright, but so they are open to having you teach there, and any knowledge of any local language there is appreciated, but it's not required. Okay, and then we move on to the South Asia region, and we have some unique award opportunities here. We'll start with Bhutan. So Bhutan has a multiple disciplines award. This is also a teaching-only grant, and it's for 10 months. They, again, are also interested in capacity building. And just so you know, that a letter for this award should not be sought. So if you're thinking about making some contacts in Bhutan and you have an idea of where you'd like to be placed, the program will actually place you. So the U.S. Embassy based in India will be responsible for your affiliation, and they'll really try and match your expertise and skills and, what your project is to an appropriate institution. India, again, the largest Fulbright Commission country in the region, offers, in addition to the Climate Award, we have two awards, the Fulbright Nehru Academic and Professional Excellence Award. That is open to all disciplines. there are 45 grants, actually, for this award. It is the largest award available in the catalog. So there's this one award has 45 spots, 45 grants. It is open to all disciplines. They don't list any specializations. They are open, really, to anything and everything, and that includes scholars who might not have a home affiliation. That includes artists, journalists, lawyers, musicians, dancers, practitioners, all kinds of grantees have been awarded this in the past. And so this is open to professionals, as you can see. Now, the Distinguished Chair Award is specifically only open to academics, and this would tend to be someone who's either an associate or full professor. This is a 4-month grant to teach or teach in research and really serve as kind of a, you know, having those chair responsibilities, advising and guiding and, you know, helping develop curriculum, et cetera. So these are the two opportunities available to India. And then moving along, we have the Maldives. So the Maldives is offering a grant for 6 months that would start in January. And this is a teaching grant. So they are open to all disciplines, but they do prefer economics, education, environmental sciences, journalism, law, medical sciences, and political science. And within that, those fields, within economics, for example, the preferences in sustainable development, and in terms of law, in criminal, judicial, or the rule of law. So they do mention some specializations as well. Scholars will be affiliated with the Maldivian National University in Male, and again, this is a 6-month teaching grant. Now, Nepal offers two different awards, and you can kind of think of it as one is a research grant and one is a teaching grant, because the teaching research grant really focuses on teaching. So whereas the All Disciplines Research Grant is open to any appropriate institution, the teaching grant does list 4 specific host institutions in Kathmandu. That includes Kathmandu University, Tribhuvan University, the Patan Academy of Health Sciences, and then the Kathmandu School of Law. So depending on your discipline, you would be in one of those institutions. And a letter of invitation is required. They provide all the contact information in the award description. Okay, moving on to Pakistan. The award is open to all disciplines. And just a note that placements are restricted to Islamabad, Lahore, and Faisalabad. And preference is given to, there are some preferred disciplines listed as well. And then the last country in the region that has awards available is Sri Lanka. And they do have an All Disciplines Award for 3 to 9 months. This is open to teaching, research, or a combination of both. And preferences given to applicants that choose to be affiliated with host institutions that have not hosted a previous Fulbrighter. Individuals also who have retired or no longer active in terms of teaching or research and who are emeriti professors will not be given preference. So whereas some awards do say that they are open to retired applicants, Sri Lanka does make a preference for those that have a home affiliation in the U.S. and that are actively engaged in teaching and research. All right, and then I have this slide here pointing out some of the regional award benefits. So these are exciting opportunities. Let's say, you know, once you receive the grant and you're in country, you are eligible for these two award benefits. The first one is the Fulbright Regional Travel Grant. So the FCA Fulbright Regional Travel Grant allows grantees in the region to be able to travel to a second country to attend a lecture or seminar or conference or assist in curriculum development or needs assessment, anything basically that doesn't involve research. If you're an artist or a dancer or musician, you can hold a master class, for example, and this covers the transportation costs. The grant can be from 3 to 14 days. And again, it's a wonderful opportunity to engage further in the region and really kind of get that exposure and understand really, you know, collaborate with others in your field in that region. And then the South and Central Asia Fulbright Mid-Year Conference. So actually this year, it just passed this past week. It was held in India, in Kochi, in the south of India. And this is open to all grantees in the South and Central Asia region. So that includes scholars, students, anybody who's in the Fulbright Scholar Student Program. And this typically happens in February or March. So for us this year, it was last week. And this is available to grantees who are currently in the country when the conference occurs. So if your grant is from August to December, this would not be an award benefit. You need to be on your grant during the conference dates. And funding to the conference is provided as an additional grant benefit. So these are just a couple of things that are available once you're in country to be able to further network with other grantees and share about your work and research in the field. Okay, so moving on to how to approach selecting an award, selecting the right award, and then putting in your application. So really half the battle in this is matching your experience to the right award, matching your profile, background, research project to what the award is looking for. As I mentioned, some do list preferred disciplines, so you know that you have more of a chance if one of your preferred if your discipline is in one of the preferred disciplines listed in the award description. So that's one way to approach it. Think about your past regional experience or any linguistic ability you have. Think about, and this is very important, to think about the relevance of your project to the particular host country, to the host institution. What will they benefit from this? Why is it relevant to them? And then also to make sure that you're applying to the right award for your career profile. If you're an early career applicant, so someone who's received their terminal degree within the last 5 years, is it open to early career applicants? Is this a postdoc award? Is it a distinguished chair award? So the distinguished chair, we only have that one to India in this region, but again, if you're looking across the catalog, making sure that your profile matches what they're looking for as well. And then we've also, as I mentioned, made some updates to the options available to the Fulbright program. And so the first one is the flex option. So if you have a research project in mind that requires more than one visit, you can apply for the flex option within that award. So it's important to check to see if that award offers the flex option. If so, then you're able to carry out that research over 2 academic years. As I mentioned, checking to see if the award matches your career profile, to see if there's a multi-country award if needed. As I mentioned, we do have one in the South and Central Asia region. And then if you do have a project that requires visiting more than one world region, we have the Global Scholar Award. Keep in mind that home affiliation with the home institution is not required, so you are welcome to apply even if you aren't currently affiliated with an institution in the United States. Okay, and I also wanted to point out some valuable application resources. This webinar is being recorded right now, and we will be archiving it on our website under the webinar schedule. So you'll be able to access this PowerPoint presentation, and you'll be able to click on all of these links, which will take you to the particular web page that we have. So again, all of the application instructions and guidelines, we have project statement guidance, sample project statements, letter of invitation guidance. We host webinars throughout the competition, as well as our blog. That's a valuable resource. You can read about what it's like to bring your family to India, or what it's like to travel, with a dependent to do your research. So you can see all those different blog posts there. And then we also encourage you, if you haven't done so already, to connect with us on My Fulbright, and then you would receive notifications on relevant awards or deadlines, webinars coming up, etc. Okay, so in terms of the application components, it isn't anything that you haven't seen before. It's pretty straightforward. The application form is online. You'll have a 3 to 5 page project statement that will really tell us what you hope to do in country, And then your resume and all these other components. Now, the key thing is that all of these components do have page limit requirements. So the project statement, as I said, is minimum of 3 pages, maximum of 5. The CV is 6 pages or 8 pages if you're a distinguished chair applicant. We do require 3 letters of reference. And then depending on the award, if you're applying for any teaching, we do need 2 to 3 outlines or course syllabi. For research awards or teaching and research, we need a bibliography, 3 pages maximum. And then if the award requires a language proficiency evaluation, there's a self-evaluation as well as the external evaluation. That should be conducted by someone who teaches the language at the university, at a university. And then the letter of invitation if it's required, as well as any supplemental materials if you're in the fields of art, architecture, writing, and journalism. Now, going into the specifics of the project statement, really it should give the committee a full sense of what you hope to do on this grant and why it's important. You should also address why you're interested in the Fulbright program and what's your motivation? How are you interested in serving as a cultural ambassador in kind of this diplomatic program? So addressing the why Fulbright is really key. And then, of course, focusing on exactly what you plan to do. And if you're teaching, what exact courses you plan to teach, what your research program will be. If there's a timeline, it would be great to have a timeline of how the research would go on. And speaking specifically to the outcomes of the grant, not only in country at the host institution, but for your home institution and for you in your career trajectory. So really speaking to the outcomes and the impact. And then addressing your adaptability and, ability to handle difficult situations or, having a kind of a plan B in your back pocket. We often hear of alumni who come back and they say, well, I had my full syllabus and curriculum all, chartered out. And when I got to the classroom, I realized students didn't have the background in this or they didn't have the level of English in this. And so you kind of have to be able to recalibrate accordingly. Because, again, each country is different from our own. So the project statement is key. And then another big component are the affiliation that you propose or the letter of invitation. So if the host institution is identified in the award description, then they will usually list it under the location, and they'll also provide a contact at that university or institution who will provide the letter of invitation. For the awards in South and Central Asia, we don't really have any partner institutions or partner hosts. And so oftentimes what you'll see under the location is any appropriate institution. Well, that's not helpful if you don't have any contacts in that country. So we encourage you to visit the Fulbright Scholar Directory, check to see if anybody on your campus has gone to that country or if you have any visiting scholars from that country. And then, you're also welcome to contact us. So as I mentioned, I work on the South and Central Asia region, so I can either suggest some potential hosts. And if I don't have that list available, I can contact the Fulbright Commissions or post the embassies abroad and ask for their advice and get that to you. So there's lots of different ways to build connections. And we certainly encourage you, if you haven't visited a country, that should not be a deterrent. We really want to encourage people who haven't gone to these places to do it through Fulbright, right? So in terms of the letter invitation, we don't have a particular template, but keep in mind that it is a non-binding expression. So if you're contacting a host institution in India, for example, and it's known for a particular particular thing that perhaps other people would also be reaching out for. Let's say it's an art institute and it's very well known. You might have a couple other applicants also reaching out to that same institution. So keep in mind that even though they provide a letter of invitation, it's showing just, it's part of the application that you're proposing. It doesn't mean that they've accepted you. Ideally, it should come from the person who you hope to collaborate with, but we understand in this region oftentimes either a letter of invitation would not be sought, or it might have to come from the head of the department or the head of the university. So depending on their levels of bureaucracy and who needs to sign off, it might not come from the person you hope to collaborate with. But as long as it comes on the letterhead and clearly outlines what you hope to do and for what length of time, as long as that matches up with what's in your application, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. So I've already kind of covered ways to make your application competitive, but again, here on this slide, it really outlines what you can do to ensure that your application is competitive. So again, I mentioned addressing why Fulbright. The key mission in this program is to really promote mutual understanding, cross-cultural understanding, et cetera. And so addressing your interest in that, this is a unique program. It's, you know, the flagship U.S. governmental program for international exchanges. And so we really want to see that you're interested in being a part of this program. And then, of course, why this particular country? So your application shouldn't read like something so generic that if I swapped out Kazakhstan and put in Sri Lanka, that it would read the same. So really kind of tailoring it to the particular country, the particular institution, and why it's important. And then, of course, ensuring that the skills that you offer and your professional background benefit the host institution and benefit, you know, that it's topical, that it's promoting exchange of knowledge, et cetera. You know, discussing your ability to be adaptable, to be flexible, to have that kind of, you know, soft diplomacy, cultural diplomacy on hand. And then, of course, last but not least, the outcomes and impact. We always like to see kind of a multiplier effect. So whether it's, you know, not that your Fulbright ends when you get back on the plane to the U.S., so hopefully you would mention in some way, and of course you can't predict the future, but would you be open to hosting a scholar from that institution to teach or research at your institution, or would you perhaps, would this help promote linkages and collaborations for a future publication or ways to internationalize your campus or curriculum, things like that. So really addressing, you know, the two-way nature of this award and how it would benefit all parties involved. Okay, so moving on to the review process and timeline. This year the application is due on September 16, and then we go through a quick review of, you know, technicalities, and then in October and November we have the U.S. peer review that takes place here in our offices at IIE. And then you can see all applications need to be, any recommended applications need to be approved by the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. And the notifications get sent out as early as January and as late as April, and then May onward, the grantees will be receiving materials and prepare for their grants. And if you are participating in a country that does not have a Fulbright commission, so basically Central Asia, you would then participate in a pre-departure orientation. Okay, so let's see, before we go into the website and catalog of awards, let's see if we have any questions that have come up that we can address. Okay, go. You can actually. Okay, so let's actually take some questions now because we've got quite a few. All right, so let's see. Okay, so for the question about the Central Asia TEFL Award, what if you don't have a particular country of preference? So you can actually discuss that with me if you like in an email. They would then, you can indicate that also in your award, in your project statement. I think that would be useful for them because then the U.S. Embassy would then place you where the need is greatest. So that's actually nice that you're flexible with that. So for the Central Asia TEFL Award, you need not have a preference, but of course they're happy to entertain any preferences you have. All right, which South Asian country accepts the flex option in addition to India? So you actually have to check the award description. Sometimes this changes year to year, so I'm happy to look that up and we can discuss that. But India for sure offers the Flex Award. I'm not sure if Nepal's Research Award offers it, but keep in mind the Flex option is strictly for research projects. So if you are on a grant for teaching and research, Flex would typically not be an option. Okay, this is a good question. If you were a Fulbright specialist before, can you apply for the Fulbright Scholar program? And the answer is yes. So if you have been a specialist in the past, and if you're currently on the roster, you're still welcome to apply to the Fulbright program for the Scholar Awards. As long as if you receive both grants, you're welcome to take both grants as long as the grant dates do not overlap. It could even be for the same country. So certainly you're welcome to apply for the specialist program, and if you're a specialist, you're welcome to apply to the scholar program. Okay, we have a question for the Fulbright Nehru Academic and Professional Excellence Award. Is work in multiple cities or regions supported, i.e., a city in the north and a city in the south? Typically not. So the idea of a host institution is that you would have one main home base. And for those of you that are interested in applying to India, I just want to let you know that I will be hosting an India-specific webinar that will be held on April 3rd, also from 2 p.m. Eastern. And that I will also be joined by a past grantee who will share their experience on the grant and what it's like. So if you have very specific questions about India, I'm happy to discuss that with you offline or during the webinar on April 3rd. The question is, let's see, it seems that the focus is on higher education. I'm interested in conducting research on a particular K-12 educational model that originated in India. Is this acceptable? If so, would partnering with a research center and K-12 host be accepted? So you're right in that the focus is on higher education, and the reason is that all teaching through the Fulbright Scholar Program must be done at the higher education level, so tertiary level. If you're researching an institution that is that's a secondary or primary or secondary organization, that may or may not be supported. So I can check on that, but it might strengthen your application then to have a home affiliation at a university, and then your field research would take place at the K-12 institution. So really, the focus here in the program is to have U.S. higher education institutions affiliated with higher education institutions in the South and Central Asia region. So it's not just the people-to-people connection, but also the institutional connection, which is valuable. So that's where the outcomes and impact come into play. So I'd be happy to discuss that with you further in an email. And let's see, will you be conducting a webinar for East Asia and the Pacific? Yes, I did that a couple weeks ago, and that is archived on the website. And this one will also be archived on the website as well. So if you look under past, you'll see not only the full presentation, but the audio and the visual is in separate files as well. Will there be any financial support to conduct teaching or research? Well, yes. So if you take a look, and now we can actually go, we can go to the catalog of awards. Okay, we're going to bring up the catalog of awards, and I'll kind of walk you through this to see where the award. Okay, so we're on the main website, and if we scroll down to about halfway, you'll see these four tiles, and we'll click on Browse the Catalog, and we're going to click on the South and Central Asia region, and we're going to search all, and let's actually go to the list view so we can see all of the awards available. And let's just open, for example, the award, the All Disciplines to Kazakhstan. And we'll scroll down a little bit, and we'll see these four tabs. We have the award details, we have the award requirements, as well as the benefits. Let's click on the benefits, and we'll see this is the stipend that's offered for this particular country. So this is where you would be able to find out the monthly stipends and any other allowances available. So here you'll also note that there's a travel and relocation allowance available. There's also a book and research allowance available. And this, we do encourage you to purchase books here in the U.S. and we'll provide you a kind of packet to send to the U.S. Embassy there. And we hope that you do lease the books and supplies at that host institution. And if you scroll down even further, you'll see there's a dependent tuition allowance. So if you do choose to bring your children, you can get reimbursed for the school fees. So the Fulbright program is very family-friendly, and we've heard a lot of great stories of Fulbrighters bringing their dependent children along for the grant time. So take a look at that in each country. You know, India also offers dependent tuition allowance. So each country has its own different set of allowances that it offers. Now, if we scroll back up to the top, and on the right side, we can see the number of grants available. So there's five grants. We can see what kind of grant activity is allowed. So in this case, all three kinds of activity. And then who it's open to. So it says, open to all level of scholars, and the deadline is there, and my contact information is there as well. So this is really the way to navigate the awards catalog. We can go back, let's scroll down also back in the award details. If we go back to the award details, we can see if Kazakhstan offers the flex option. So it says yes, it offers that, but it does have some grant parameters. So in this particular case, it is offered only for research grants, and then they do prefer that you stay, if you break up your time there, 1 month at the minimum, and then 6 months at the maximum, or 3 months at the maximum, sorry, in one particular segment. So that's really, if we scroll down further, we can see also the disciplines that are preferred. So in this case, it's a really robust list of disciplines, and then any other information, and then, of course, the information about the travel grant and the mid-year conference that I mentioned earlier. So this is really, you know, if you think about the awards kind of as little mini job descriptions, you can only apply to one, so it's really important to be selective and carefully consider where you would be the best match. And that's really the way to approach it. So if we go back to the questions, and we can pull up our slides again. Yep. Okay, so let's take some of the questions. Okay, so I have some generic questions that typically come up, and I'm happy to see if we've got more questions available. So let's go back to our question box, and let's see. Are American citizens permanently affiliated with non-American universities abroad eligible for the Fulbright Scholar Program? That's a good question. So we do have an eligibility requirement that states that you cannot have lived more than 5 of the 6 years preceding the application. So lived abroad, that is, sorry. So you must have some, there is some residency requirements. So taking a look at the eligibility requirements on our website, and if you do fulfill that requirement, and we do consider, by the way, 9 months in 1 year is considered a full year. So if you've been going back and forth just to teach, but you come back to the U.S. for a few months, if it's still 9 months or more, that's considered a full year. Okay, let's see if there's any other questions. Is it common to have collaborators from the home institutions? I think perhaps you mean host institutions. It's not necessarily common. I mean, it really depends on where you're going in the region. Oftentimes, people may not have any contacts or collaborators in this particular region, especially in Central Asia, and we're happy to facilitate that. So this is really a way for those of you who have not had a chance to explore the South and Central Asia region and would like to have an opportunity to teach or research, to do it through Fulbright, because especially in the case of Central Asia, they will place you where your expertise and skills are needed most. The same is true for a lot of the countries in South Asia, Bhutan, Sri Lanka. India, of course, with so many wards, they do allow you to affiliate with any appropriate institution. But, of course, they also prefer applications that list institutions that don't always have a Fulbrighter, that are not in the main cities of Delhi, Mumbai, Bangalore, et cetera. So going beyond kind of the metro cities in South Asia is encouraged as well. Let's see, another question just came in. Are there travel benefits for dependents? Yes, so as I just mentioned in the last, as I pulled up the award to Kazakhstan, take a look at the award benefits tab, and you'll see if they offer any dependent tuition allowance, relocation allowance, et cetera. Okay, let's see. How detailed should the course proposals be for teaching applications, and are the syllabi proposed supposed to serve as an example, or as or as the specific course we are proposing to teach? Okay, those are two good questions. So if you're proposing just to teach, you really should go into explaining what you hope to teach. If you're planning on teaching two courses, for example, what is the relevance to that population of students and to that university to have you come and teach those courses, and how are you best equipped to do so? If you have two courses in mind, then I would certainly include those two syllabi as well. You're also welcome to include a third one from a course that you've done in the past, if the two courses you plan to teach are new. So, and if you don't have any courses that are confirmed by the host institution, if you're just kind of offering them, let's say the host institution will be determined by your placement, by the U.S. Embassy, and you'd like to offer two particular courses in American studies or, you know, American history, et cetera, discussing really, you know, what you would achieve in that, why they're relevant, and how they would benefit from that. So really, I would say for the syllabi, when you're attaching the syllabi, provide at least one that relates to the course that you're proposing to teach, and then perhaps one that you've done in the past if the other one is new. Okay, so we're almost at the 3 o'clock hour. I don't see any more questions coming in. I've got my contact information up there. It's South and Central Asia at IIE.org. And if you have any questions that come up after this webinar, yep, here's my contact information. And if you have any questions that come up after this webinar, please email me. Check out our website for more of the resources. We've really kind of updated and upgraded our website this past year to include a lot more application support resources, such as the review criteria, the eligibility requirements, the application instructions, et cetera. And we also have a new application system. So even if you had applied last year and were hoping to reuse some of your, reuse your application, you still have to submit a brand new application. We will be hosting a couple of webinars in the next few months on how to fill out the application. We'll be taking questions live. So be on the lookout for the application walkthrough, the virtual advising and application walkthrough webinars. You can also, of course, view any of these webinars on your own during your free time if you're not able to attend the live recording, the live sessions. And so check in our webinar schedule under the past webinars. Okay, well, on behalf of the Fulbright Program and IIE, I thank you for attending this edition of Fulbright webinars, and I thank you and look forward to receiving and helping you with your application. Bye-bye.